Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
Tuesday, 6 September, I'm Simon Brown coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Comrade Mepurwani, we'll touch on the Bidvest and AVI results, John Lewis from F&B Commercial Property, impact of current spike on inflation having on retail property, also comparing to the financial crisis of 08-09. And then Jonathan Cherry, true cost of car ownership and the impact of a car culture on our cities. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb: no cheap chicken on the shelf. That's according to RCL Food, saying they're slamming the DTIC's decision to halt the suspension of that anti-dumping duties. Quite simply, they're saying it's not actually working. From Fin24, Renogen switches on SA's first commercial LNG plant. So phase one up and going, up to full capacity in a month or so. Now we turn our attention to phase two. Way bigger, way longer. Morning markets. US was closed yesterday, Labor Day. Asia is mixed. Sydney up a couple of points. Tokyo down a couple of points. Commodities all green. Gold, $1,731 an ounce. Brent, $94.97 a barrel. Platinum, $837. And palladium, $2,052. Rand, a little bit stronger, 1710. Top 40 opening call, about 120 points to the downside, that's 0.2%, and that is 10 cent trades down just over 2% in the Hong Kong lunch break.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Carmen Mepurwani, portfolio manager at Absa Asset Management. Carmen, morning. Appreciate the early morning time. AVI, we touched on it when the trading update came out. And headline earnings up 6.1, dividend up 6.2%. The number I always go to with them is margins. And they make the point, gross margins protected by pricing and hedging disciplines. That really is sort of AVI's, one of their key points. They defend margins at all costs. Your take on their results and the potential for what's not a bad number, I thought, considering it's tough out there.
No, exactly. I mean, we've discussed, you know, all the headwinds for most companies, but I think more so for food producers, right? You've got supply chain issues, you've got inflation, you've got power cuts, etc. And I think that these results were pretty sturdy on the basis of that, but they were well guided, so the market was expecting it. I think the more important thing in terms of how the investment world is looking at it is based on the outlook and the sort of tone from management, and they have remained very, very cautious. So I think we're still not out of the rut specifically for food producing sector. As I've mentioned, I think these results were steady. Probably the best that they could do under the circumstances. But as you've mentioned, they do have in their back pocket, you know, the hedging, which has been a key thing for them. And it has assisted them. So I think they'll continue, and that's sort of the vein that we will look at it from.
Yeah, and I take your point. I mean, considering the circumstances, I mean, I sound like a principal here, but considering the circumstances, a really, really good set of numbers. Bidvest, these were the year-end June numbers. I mean, lots of really, really good numbers coming out of here. But the market frankly seemed to be expecting it, and almost 100 billion in revenue, a chunky dividend, best dividend they've paid in some time. We've said before, some of these companies actually managed to come out stronger from the pandemic, and there's base effect here. I thought these were chunky numbers.
Absolutely. I mean, I can't fault them anything. I know that the CEO did focus and say, you know, of the seven divisions, six, you know, were positive and growing. But she did there was also a focus on the financial service sector and how there's going to be a turnaround. So in 2023, you know, expect better, which is what you want to hear. You've got a company that's got good balance sheet. Definitely seeing tailwinds from the economy sort of opening up there, so that they have their finger in all the industries that will sort of be boosted by the economy reopening. So I, as you've mentioned, I definitely think good results. Even if you compare to pre-COVID, as you've mentioned, you know, they've done a massive step up compared to 2019. And this on the off the back of the pandemic. So yeah, definitely a great result. And I expect that they will continue in that vein.
Yeah, and running through. I mean, they're paying 7.44 dividend for the full year. As I say, I'm trying to run my eye down this. It's been a while since we got such a chunky dividend out of them. We'll leave it there. Colin Mapuani, portfolio manager, Absa Asset Management. Appreciate the early morning.
Hear that? Nothing. Your money can do more when it blocks out the noise, as hard as it is these days. When you invest in the Stanlib Balanced Cautious Fund, we manage the risks so that you can see stable inflation-beating returns through market cycles. Invest with more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with John Lewis, property sector strategist at FNB Commercial Property. John, appreciate the early morning time as always. You put out a note looking at the retail space and kind of comparing its incentives to the global great financial crisis, that of course the 2008 and 2009. You make the point that the current surge in inflation, the interest rate hiking cycle, it's rough out there for consumers, but nowhere near perhaps as severe as what we were seeing back in the great financial crisis.
Yes, that's right, Simon. You know, in the global financial crisis, everybody got obsessed with Lehman Brothers collapse and, you know, financial events like that. But what they didn't realize is that, in my view, the key driving force of the end of the housing bubble in that year or those years was a big inflation surge, very similar to the one now, a big oil price shock and a big food price shock. And to the extent that we got to double-digit consumer price inflation, and up went interest rates by 500 basis points in the process. So that was quite a considerable shock, and that was what really brought the house of cards tumbling down in the housing market. But the retail property market and the commercial property sector in general felt it as well. This time around, the surge is less severe to date, 7.8% CPI, and petrol prices starting to come off. So it looks like we might be near the peak of CPI inflation, and interest rates up 200 basis points and possibly another 100 or so to go. So not too bad. But the big difference now is that the run-up to this inflation spike has been far worse than the global financial crisis. Before that, we had economic boom times, which boost the financial strength of a lot of businesses. This time around, we've had big recession in 2020, almost a decade of economic growth stagnation. So we are financially probably a lot more frail and able to take a lot less. That's the big difference now.
And you also, I take that point, I mean, absolutely. I remember that lead up to the 08-09. I remember then Finance Minister Trevor Manuel cutting taxes, which was, personal taxes, which was frankly unheard of and hasn't been heard of since. The other change, I mean, you make the point in your note that, the costs, and particularly you think municipal utility tariffs, those have also been really coming in and putting the squeeze in. So that double squeeze, the one sense of, frankly, a lack of economic growth and then a cost squeeze.
No, absolutely. I mean, the big cost increases, which are the key drivers of operating costs in commercial property space, electricity tariffs, the other utilities tariffs, the municipal rates, and the big hiking started just sort of round about the global financial crisis or after that. Up until then, we had very cheap electricity. And then from there onwards, it's just with these every year, well, most years above inflation increases in these items. So the operating cost environment for, especially like retail property, for instance, has changed dramatically over the past just over a decade from what it was back then. That's a key challenge at the moment.
And is it a sense? I mean, retail is undoubtedly tough. I mean, it depends the space room, but I mean, retail's a tough space to operate in. Are we seeing increasing in delinquencies? I'm thinking, rental payments are behind on that, and give an indication of just how bad that squeeze is.
Yeah, I think what we've seen in the TPN data is prior to the global financial crisis, there was a really gradual squeeze as the economic stagnated, but the percentage of retail tenants in good standing was generally above 70%. Mm. Now we've got back to about 63%. We took a big dip in 2020, sure, down into the 50s, but the percentage of tenants in good standing has clawed its way back, but only as far as about 63%, and in early this year, it started to show signs of deterioration again. So it's been I call it a partial recovery. We haven't got back to healthier 2019 pre-COVID levels yet, and already the interest rate hiking from their data looked like it was starting to exert pressure yet again.
You mentioned the rates, but maybe another 100 points or so to the upside. We are seeing inflation coming down a bit. We are seeing, for example, petrol comes down tomorrow, giving some relief to the consumer. Is the consumer going to be in a strong enough place to go out and sort of support retail, or is it going to be another bleak, maybe even a couple of years for the retail space?
No, I think it's a tough year. Not bleak, but it's a tough few years. Look, it's a lot better than during the lockdown of 2020, sure, obviously. But that's a hard few years. I think, as I've just mentioned, the tenants in good standing, percentages not even back to pre-COVID levels yet. So tough years, and we've seen real net operating income when you adjust for inflation. Real net operating income on retail has been in broad decline since about 2016, as have real capital values when you adjust for inflation too. So it's been a sort of a stagnating environment even before COVID. And yeah, I think that environment kind of continues in the coming years, that mediocre environment, until such time as we hopefully have more meaningful economic structural reforms and get an economy that's growing at 3 or 4% yet again. But that's probably some way off.
Yeah, it's that proper economic growth coming. And of course, later today, we'll get a second quarter GDP. John Lewis, property sector strategy at FNB Commercial Property. Appreciate the early morning.
There's no postponing the inevitable. Your money knew this day would come. And you know what? It can hardly wait to start giving some back to you. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Jonathan Cherry from Cherry Flava, talking car ownership, cost of. But Jonathan, morning, appreciate the early morning. Before we get to cost of ownership, almost a sense of cost to cities. And weirdly, you sent out a note literally as it arrived in my inbox. I was reading it. There was a tweet that came through. There's a chap I follow in San Francisco who rails against the sense that cities are built for cars more than people. And he made a great point. SimCity, which is obviously that computer game where you create cities, he said the creators couldn't accurately reflect the scale of urban parking, because if they did, the car would fall apart. And if you think about your local macro, the car park is significantly larger than the actual store itself. Jonathan, we lost you there? No, we seem to have lost Jonathan completely. He's on my line. It's the sense that, and I wonder oftentimes, I look at 7th Avenue and I'm Melville, and I know people in Melville are probably telling me to leave their suburb alone. But I sit there at one of those restaurants having a drink or a dinner with my wife, and I think, how much better if we just closed that street off and said to folks, you know what, catch an Uber, park at the top or the bottom, rather than actually getting to the cramming it with cars. And the example in LA, where every time they've got that giant freeway and they add extra lanes to it to alleviate congestion, it just actually makes more congestion rather than actually get rid of and alleviate. Have we got Jonathan back? No, we are struggling to get him on the line. And it's that sort of sense that in the olden days, let's go back to, I don't know, the 1900s, 1800s, early 1900s, cities were very much built for people. And now the sense is cities are very much built for cars, as a first thought. I look at shopping centers often, and there's only way to access it is via that vehicle. There's no pedestrian access to it. If you're arriving in an Uber, how do you get in? If you're arriving on foot, how do you actually get into the city? And it is an absolute obsession. We now have Jonathan Cherry. Sorry, Jonathan, we had lost you there. I was just ruminating around the theory that the obsession with cities and cars, and we really, these days, build cities for cars, it seems, rather than for people. And this I mean, this is just not good for cities, or truthfully, for the lifestyle within for people.
Yeah, and it never used to be that way. It's a global problem where it seems like, as you say, cities are built specifically for big, heavy cars to get through them as quickly as possible. But go back 60 years and you'll find that the high street was very much a shopping district where cars were just part of the mix. There would be pedestrians who would be shopping and enjoying the streets. It was designed so that the city could be used by people rather than by cars. But I found an article which was published in The Guardian, some research done by a Dutch transport researcher, where he's actually suggesting that the words that we use these days are really crafting the reality that we are now adopting mm-hmm. as normal. And what he's saying is that, you know, on the radio, when we listen to the traffic report, we kind of think of traffic as, well, this is just part of the daily life of the city. It's not necessarily people that are sitting there. Traffic is just a thing. And people will say, well, I'm sitting in traffic. Well, you're not sitting in traffic. Yeah. You are traffic. You created traffic. In Cape Town, we have something called open streets. And it's quite interesting that when we shut off the street to cars, open streets is now saying, well, now the street is open. But in general, in our language, if a street is shut off, we say, oh, that street is closed. But, you know, closed to who? It's actually now an open street because people can use it rather than cars. So I think that there is a traffic logic which is pervasive in our cultures, which in many ways we just accept as real. We don't ever question these things. And I think more and more research is coming out to say, well, let's start questioning these things from a different perspective.
And that's a great point. There was an article I read, and we're going back many, many years, maybe as far back as a decade. Again, it was somewhere in the Netherlands. And they removed pavements. And the sense is that this is a terrible idea. All the pedestrians are going to get run over. But they kind of integrated the vehicles and the people and the retailers, and actually became safer and actually saw sort of less vehicular traffic, rather than the obsession is there must be a space and a parking for every sort of every SUV that happens to want to come past.
Yeah, and you know, I spent a lot of time in Taipei, and they've integrated the pavements with the streets. So there isn't a defined cutoff between the pavement and the street. And because of that, cars are far more wary of pedestrians because now the pedestrian becomes part of the scene. So design plays a huge role. But just on your point there, Simon, there's another very interesting video that goes into the real cost of car ownership. Mm. And this is a guy who lives in Berlin, and he's obviously talking from a German perspective. But he's saying that if you just own a normal VW Golf, over the period of 60 years, if you bring into account inflation and you look at, you know, the general maintenance, depreciation, fuel costs, he says that that car will cost the average German 26 million rand to own over a lifetime. And in addition to that, the German government spends on average, whether you own a car or not, the German taxpayer pays 85,000 rand a year just on keeping the road infrastructure going. So his argument is that if you take that money and you offer free public transport, it would be far cheaper than what it is for the government to run the existing car infrastructure which exists in Germany. So it's that kind of perspective, not just from a language perspective, but also from a financial perspective that perhaps we're not necessarily thinking about. And in South Africa, you just think of how our cities are really geared around are just a blind assumption that cars are the best way to get people around. And that's not the case. It's actually keeping people poorer and taxes high. And surely that's something that we should be questioning.
Yeah, and in often cases, making for a less good experience. I was chatting before we could get you back where, you know, shopping centers, if you don't drive into a shopping center, access to them is really, really difficult. And there are a few exceptions I can think of, but I can also think of some shopping centers, you either drive to them or you simply don't get there at all. We'll leave it there. Jonathan Cherry from Cherry Flavor, appreciate, as always, the early morning. That's it for today. Chatting with Nkunzi about the US dollar index and at 20-year highs and potential impact on the JSE. We said, could that dollar strength, which of course is ZAR weakness, help SA commodity and offshore rich market? Almost half of you said, nope, not going to save us. The rest was split equally between it could and maybe, but only just a little bit. And our poll today, talking around cars, I mean, should we be closing off some of those busy streets for pedestrians only? Should we be relooking at how we build our cities and how we interact in our cities. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. We're going to talk local GDP.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.